Thank you for joining us and welcome to a special edition of Answers Network. I'm Alan Cardoza. If this is your first time watching or listening to the show, every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media groups, sharing my show and others like it that focus on improved health, happiness, and education, as well as success, is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, this week, we're going to flip the script. I'm going to be the guest of the show, and I'm interviewed by fellow PI Matthew Spayer for his show, PI Perspectives. So please listen as we talk about how I got into the PI business, finding runaways, working human trafficking cases, as well as providing advice for parents of teens and the importance of persistence, communication, and a work-life balance. Now, when the show ends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network or subscribe to our show through your favorite podcast platform. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people and know that I greatly appreciate it. Now, sit back and enjoy the show.
Creative professional with an international problem you can't solve? Conflict International has the knowledge and relationships to jump in for you. We compensate investigators for referring cases to our office. Contact us today for details. Conflict International uses insight, intelligence, investigation, risk management, and strategic solutions to solve problems troubling individuals and companies of all kinds, anywhere around the world. Whether you're planning to hire a person to a position of trust, carry out due diligence on a company, trace hidden assets, or require skilled boots on the ground, Conflict International investigators can seamlessly pursue a case across borders, offering a truly global solution. Find out about our extensive range of services at conflictinternational.com. Conflict International, global reach, international knowledge. Welcome to this week's episode of PI Perspectives. We're back to our regular format this week, and we have a great show. Today, California PI Alan Cardoza joins the show. Alan has had an amazing career and has a passion for finding missing and exploited children. We talk about how he was at the forefront in locating these children before the advent of the internet. You can't value this skill set old-fashioned gumshoeing enough. So please welcome Alan Cardoza, and your host, private investigator Matt Spayer.
And welcome to this week's episode of PI Perspectives. This is Matt Spayer, your host. This week, I am really, really happy to have a friend of mine on the show, somebody we've talked about doing an episode for a bit, and this guy actually happens to be in the biz. So I want to welcome Alan Cardoza to the program. Alan, how are you?
I am doing great. As you know, I've got sort of a second lease on life, so I am enjoying every bit of it.
Awesome. Second lease in a few different ways. Yeah. Story for another day. Yes. Alan has had an amazing career, actually, 40 years, over 40 probably, in investigative work, and he's covered a couple different aspects. And one of his passions is rescuing children. And it's something, that he started doing a long time ago and has made a good career out of it and built up a big business and then downsized a bit and is doing some consulting work with Conflict International. He's actually a vice president with Conflict. We're going to kind of pull apart your career and what you did and how you got to where you are now. So why don't we take it from the beginning? How did you get into the business?
Well, first, Matthew, thank you for having me. And I appreciate this opportunity to be able to talk to, a lot of the other people in the industry. And I know that I was given an incredible opportunity by Walt Zwanitzer. I was a 19-year-old kid that went into his office and wanted to have a part-time job while I was in law school. And he initially said, I need a 19-year-old kid, like I need another hole in my head, and right. dismissed me. But I listened to him, and what I heard him say was, I don't need a 19-year-old kid because they don't have the persistence necessary for this job. Right. So I showed up in his office the next week, every day before he arrived, and I would sit there and talk to his secretary. Right. And he'd walk in, he'd look at her, he'd look at me, look back at her, and shrug his shoulders like, I don't know why this kid is here. And he'd go in his office, and I'd talk with her. Well, after about a week of this, he came out and he looked at her and he said, I've got a rush case. Get me, you know, get George, you know, get him out there right now. Can't get George. He's on such and such a case. Well, get Brett then. Can't get him. He's on this, and goes on and on. And then eventually he looks at me and he looks at her. He goes, I guess I'll try this kid.
There you go.
And so my point for bringing it up is that it was the persistence. First of all, it was listening. It was listening to a man that had been in the business for a very long time, and then being persistent in showing him that I would be there if he needed somebody.
Sure.
And, you know, and so that's kind of how I got hired.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess you were lucky that he didn't get a loitering ticket. Quite a bit.
Exactly. Know,
it's funny that you say that, because I had a similar situation, not being a 19-year-old, but having a prospective employee. So I had been at an event for John Jay College, which I graduated from. It was an alumni event. I went back, and you know, we there were a whole bunch of people there. Everybody was talking about what they did, and I was talking about the fact that I actually don't have a law enforcement career. I didn't, you know, like it just didn't work out that way for me. I ended up going in the private industry and then starting my own business. And I was talking about that. And afterwards, there was a gentleman who came over to me. He goes, I'd like to start working for you. I said, great. Spanish speaking guy. All right. That's great. Had a law enforcement background from South America. Okay, great. Awesome. Right. Very mature. Seems good. Okay, so where do you live? He goes, I live in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I was like, well, that's a deal breaker. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours from New York City. I'm like, this job requires you to drive a lot. And he's like, no, I want to work for you. I was like, oh, no, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out. So you talk about persistence. This guy literally, like, wasn't sitting in my office, but he was calling me like every day for like two or three mm-hmm. weeks. And he's like, give me a chance. You know, it's my decision to make that commute, not yours. I was like, fine. All right. I'll just try you out. It's good. Right. Mm-hmm. So the guy ended up working for me for almost 8 years. He was fantastic. He was really, really good. The best first employee I could ever have. And that's literally what he was. Yeah.
While you were talking about that, it reminded me of when you said, as far as an employee, I needed an undercover agent. And this is, I'm going back 35 years. And I had described exactly what I needed, and I needed somebody that was Hispanic, that could fit in, and that was in a really, really bad neighborhood, and that a lot of the workers there were migrant workers, and it would be a rough assignment. Then we needed somebody that could fit in, and I had people that showed up with their you know, their resume, they showed up in a suit and they did different things. One guy came in and he looked like he just rolled off the street. He looked like a migrant worker. He
right.
hadn't shaved.
Right.
And he came in and I'm looking at him like, I don't know if he gets this. And he hands me his resume and there's a picture of him in a suit. And he said, I just as soon show you that I can fit in, but I know how to wear a suit, rather than show up in a suit and have you guess if I can fit in.
He's an actor.
That guy, that's the guy that got the job. So, you know, and I'm glad we're talking about this, because I know that your show goes out to lots of investigators, and many of which might be looking for a job. So these are some of the things that you can do. If you can be persistent, if you can show that you can fit into a situation, this is how we're going to respond to it as the employer.
Yeah. No, it's fitting into a situation as being dependable, you know, mm-hmm. being efficient, able to, you know, follow directions, you know, showing up is, you know, 75% of the job is actually putting the effort into doing it. You know, and just knowing how to write or how to ask the right questions and write good reports and things like that. So that's all important stuff. And, you know, it leads you to other opportunities and it leads you to more interesting work, like finding runaway teens. So tell me about the Runaways, man. How'd you get into doing all that?
Well, and that also started with Walt. And Walt had a contract with Del Amo Hospital. So if a child ran away from the psychiatric unit, Walt was the person that would find them.
Right.
And while working for him, one took off and he goes, here's the assignment. I want you to find this snot-nosed kid because you look like him.
Nice.
I went, okay, I think that's a compliment.
Right.
But that became my account, and that became something that I really, really thought this was my calling, because it was, you know, I was dealing with kids that weren't that much younger than me.
Right.
And so I could think like them. I could fit in. I was fortunate that at 19 years old, I looked like I was 15. So yeah, I would just blend right in with them. And the other kids would tell me where they were because they thought I was one of them.
Right.
But the one case that had the biggest influence on me was a runaway girl. And in this case, you know, I met with the mother. The mother said, you know, that she'd been gone for X amount of days. And I said, you know, well, you know, where's the father? She said, we're divorced. I said, well, was it possible that, you know, maybe she's with him? She goes, no, that's not it at all. She goes, I already called him. That's not happening. I said, right. Okay. So I started looking and I learned that she was going to be at this party at this house. And I started watching from a distance, and I'm watching with binoculars. And as the party starts to break up, these what looks like dads are coming to pick up their daughters. And you know, these girls are getting on the car or truck or whatever, and then they would leave. And then I see what I think is the girl. And so I'm watching with the binoculars, gets in this vehicle, and they start going. In the back of my mind, and I thought, well, this is one of those divorces where parents are not communicating. And you know, so I'm thinking I'm going to end up calling mom and saying she's with dad and everything's okay. But I follow them, make sure they go back to what I think is dad's house. Well, they went back to a trailer park. And after they parked and went inside, I took some time. I snuck up. I looked into the window. And the guy was having sex with her.
It's not dad.
Yeah. But at that point in time, it hit me right. that I hadn't been watching a party. I'd been watching a place where adult men were taking teenage girls.
Right. So we're talking about trafficking and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We're now talking about human trafficking. We're talking about these girls being exploited. And I ended up calling Walt, and again, this is so far back that, you know, I had to go to a payphone.
I was going
to
say, I don't think he had a cell phone, right?
and he said, you know, that's, you know, it's human trafficking, you know, stay there, call the police. We had the police come in. She was already gone. The police hit the party first. And so she was gone. We ended up finding her again, you know, but it had such an effect on me that became my focus. Any case that involved children, any case that involved teens who were being exploited, that became my focus as to how I could not only get them out of that situation, but I felt so close to their age and their situation in life that I would sit down and talk with them. And in fact, I changed my major from law to psychology because I was so interested in what was going on in their life that put them in these situations and how could I help?
Sure. I mean, the world has enough lawyers anyways. So.
Yeah.
I think we did okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. And when you think about it, like back in then, right? 35, 40 years ago. I mean, we don't have all the technology that we have today. You know, I mean, granted, now it's a whole different ballgame because a lot of this trafficking takes place, you know, in the dark web or whatever, right? So there's not that tangible location to go to find somebody. They're wherever they are until they're not, right?
Right.
You must have seen that progression over the years. Things just start to shift. When would you say that it, you know, doing that kind of work, that it started to shift into something different than the situation that you just explained?
Well, I think you've identified it because it became the internet age. And as we had the internet age, a lot of parents would say, well, you know, what are you going to do, you know, to find them? And back then it was, you find their friends, you know, and you follow their friends, and their friends lead you to them. And I said, now, if you do not have somebody that knows how to search social media, mm-hmm. how to, you know, how to deal with things electronically, you're going to have a much more difficult time. But again, you nailed it. Once the internet came in, it became an entirely different ballgame as to how you would find them, mm-hmm. which is one of the things that's important for any investigator is times are going to change. If you don't continue to grow and change with them, you're going to become antiquated and you're not going to stay in business.
Right. And obviously the makeup of who these men or women are that are actually trafficking these kids. I mean, I'm sure that's the look, the makeup of that particular person has changed over the years too, I would assume, right?
Yeah, it actually got more organized. You know, in the past, you know, you would find that there was a couple of people that decided that they could make a little bit of extra money, whereas now it is much more organized. It's part of an organized crime situation to where they're moving them. Mm-hmm. We ended up having cases to where they would you know, they would take kids that they would get from California. We would end up finding them in Florida because their plan was that they would move them. They'd move them to Vegas after about a month, mm-hmm. you know, and then they would move them to Texas, and then they would move in. So they would keep moving them on the basis that they could never go back to their original family, and they couldn't be in one place long enough to be able to get new friends or a new family, a new group that would actually help them outside of doing what they needed them to do for their criminal enterprise.
Yeah, I'm sure the in Florida, the on the mailbox, it said it had the initials J-E on it.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yes. Yes, unfortunately.
They all end up down in Florida. Sometimes they hang themselves too when they're done. So, it's crazy. It's really crazy to see how things have changed. What's your opinion with regards to the ease or the access of internet pornography? You got to think that's kind of kicked everything up a notch and has whetted some appetites and grown the trafficking business. What's your opinion on that?
Well, again, I think you're right. It has grown it, and in a lot of cases, it's because the world got smaller. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, before, you know, you would have somebody in, you know, if they took them in Orange County and maybe they went to Los Angeles, you know, so, you know, they went 40 miles and that was far enough away from their social group.
Right.
That the kids didn't immediately try to go back.
Right.
Now, a lot of it is they're brought in from other countries. So they research and find them from another country. They set up fake jobs. They bring them over to this country. They take away their passports and they own them.
Right.
You know, it's ugly.
Yeah, it's so scary, man. I think the internet has caused the world to be smaller, and for the opportunities for bad actors to be greater. Right. And that being anonymous and being able to hide in the shadows, you know, only adds to it. I recall, I haven't really done much of this type of work, but I recall an incident years ago where I had to go to a building, a very prominent building in New York City, and go photograph an apartment, and a penthouse apartment. And, you know, the attorney, you know, he's like, yeah, I want to be very clear about this. Like, I need you to photograph everything. I need you to document all the rooms, the measurements of the rooms, you know, square footage, like all this stuff. And it wasn't occupied at the time. And they were trying to sell it, I think. And, I'm like, what's going on here? He goes, oh, yeah, this was a dungeon where somebody was like kept, you know, against their will for a long time. And it doesn't hit you till you get there and you're in this room or in this apartment. And you're going, somebody was trapped here.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a nice view of Central Park, but man, like you don't, it doesn't really hit home until you're there and going, somebody could not leave this space, you know, on their own volition, right? They were literally trapped here. And you just let that sit there for a while and marinate in your brain. It's scary to think that people could do this to one another, right?
Well, and for those of us, you know, you and I have talked and stuff that are raised, you know, in the United States and, you know, and have had a lot of really wonderful opportunities and stuff. It's just beyond our even comprehension that there are people living like that, that there are people that are holding other people against their will, that there are people that are exploiting them for money. I mean, it's really difficult to handle. On the other hand, when you go into other countries and you're working cases in other countries and you talk with some of the people there, they're not shocked.
Right.
Because they've been raised with, that's just one of the things that happens.
Right, it's what happens, right?
Yeah.
Which is sad, you know, but I guess it is what it is. And as you go to these other countries and you see cultural differences, you know, these are things like you are shocked, but, you know, again, like you're saying, okay, this is just par for the course. Nothing to see here. Keep it moving. And then when you start considering about governments, right, and governments getting involved, and that's not always the case where you'll have a government agency that will look at this issue or this matter. Even now it's right in front of our face, but you don't even see too much of that. It's more along the lines that I think retired people that have those connections throughout the world that feel that strongly about doing this kind of work that get into it, right?
Yeah, there is a lot of really great nonprofits that are using, as you say, you know, retired people that are going into these countries and making a difference. Mm-hmm. And they know, especially if they worked in that country before, they know that in some cases you can't trust law enforcement. Law enforcement in some cases are involved. Mm-hmm. And so they have to set it up in such a way that they can get everything done that they need to get done. But at the same time, they know that they're taking some huge risks.
Yeah.
Because in some cases, they're taking money out of the pockets of law enforcement themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, there are some really cool events in our space, in our industry that take place earlier this year. I had Buddy Jericho on. Buddy's actually been on a few times. And they do this thing called the Skull Games. Which when you hear Skull Games, that's, wonder who wants to do that? Was this death like crazy craziness? Like, are there skateboarders running rolling around all over the place? What is this about? And essentially it's the open source, people, the new specialists that they break into teams and they have a competition to try and locate trafficked people. Yeah. Or identify pimps, you know, who can then be arrested. And it's usually like a 2-day event. They're doing them more frequently now. I think I just saw the other day they're going to do one in New Jersey with Cynthia Hetherington and the Hetherington Group. They're going to be doing something coming up. And I think it's great that, you know, us O-Centers for Good are out there trying to, you know, push and really rescue people like this. It's good. It's a way for us to use our tools and our trade to give back or do something. But, you know, this isn't what you signed up for when you initially got into it, right? It's more than just tracking down somebody's friends to find out exactly where they're at. So it's it's a long game for you, and it's a different game, right?
Yeah, but to me, it's been a blessing. You know, the fact that I could end up doing something where I can make a positive difference in the world, and have figured out how to get paid to do it. You know, I take that as one of the blessings of life.
Yeah. So we're going to step out here to take a quick break. When we come back in, we'll hammer a little more on this detail. And then I want to talk a little bit also about, you know, obviously, if you've had a long career and some of the new things that you're doing, the partnerships that you have at this point. So everybody sit tight and we will be right back.
Check out the PI Institute of Education at PIinstitute.com. Since 1989, Kelly Riddle has been teaching on subjects such as surveillance, nursing home investigations, insurance fraud, domestic investigations, hidden assets, and accident scene investigations. The PI Institute of Education is a featured learning partner in the investigatorstoolbox.com. So check out the free content on the site, then visit the Institute for more great savings on additional classes. Do you enjoy our podcast and the guests we bring you? Since 2019, Matt and his team have done their very best to give you amazing shows each week. If you feel like our show has helped you to be a better investigator, or maybe even inspired you to become an investigator, please let us know. We're looking for testimonials. Drop Matt an email with a recorded 20 to 30 seconds of you talking about this podcast. You can also email him something verbal about the website. His email is matthews@satellitepi.com. And if you really feel blessed for having this content, consider supporting Matt and our show by joining Investigators Toolbox. You really have to see version 2.0. And at just 49 cents a day, it's a no-brainer. Are you an investigator that can't find the time for research, or are you stuck on a case that has given you issues? Satellite Investigations has a dedicated research team that specializes in skip tracing and defendant locates. Let our expert researchers use a balanced technique of research and pretext know-how to authenticate data and get you the answers you need. Contact us today by emailing us at newcase@satellitepi.com.
And welcome back to PI Perspective. This is Matt Sperry, your host. Today, I'm here with my friend Alan Cardoza. Alan's an investigator in California, but does work with Conflict International as well. So, Alan, I want to welcome you back to the program.
Thank you, Matt. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad we finally had the chance to chat. So, your actual business is West Shield Adolescent Services, right? And West Shield Investigations. That's your baby, right?
Right. Yeah. And, it started as West Shield Investigations, but I was doing so much work with transporting, at-risk youth that for insurance reasons and so many other, and licensing reasons, it made more sense to split the companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that totally makes sense. I'm sorry, what's that?
That totally makes sense.
And eventually, West Shield Adolescent Services became larger than West Shield Investigations, to the point in which it was doing probably 350 transports a year, as well as crisis intervention, and really working with teens.
Right. So obviously that involves some scaling up on your end.
Yes.
What was that like? I mean, what were some of the challenges early on getting that going?
I think I'm going to get some people mad at me. I think one of the things that I started to shift away from, a lot of the people that I was using for the investigation company was law enforcement, and some departments allowed moonlighting. And in other cases, I had retired people, but I had some really good people that were former or current law enforcement. Once I shifted over to doing a lot more of the transports, started to get away from it. Mm-hmm. We had a certain amount of people that were, but what we were realizing, especially from a management standpoint, that was working out. But the adolescent services part, you get younger and younger. You need to, your agents need to get younger. They need to be able to relate better.
Right.
And I used to refer to it as a stretch. And I would say to the agents, and myself eventually becoming one of the older people, mm-hmm. was, you know, when you're young, your stretch is huge. You can fit into so many different situations and play different roles as you find these young people. As we got older, it gets smaller.
Right.
And I can only play certain roles in these situations. And you can't go into a group of kids and get them to talk to you if to them, you know, you look like a parent or you look like a cop.
Okay, boomer. There you go, right?
Yeah. You know, so, but anyway, so that was the biggest thing is the Adolescent Services Company, although managed with the structure of people trained in law enforcement, sure. we'd continue to hire younger and younger people, and we would set up teams. And so the team might be a retired law enforcement. If we were going after a male, we might have a retired law enforcement, but we might have a 22-year-old trainee that just got out of the academy and it hasn't been picked up by anybody, that fits better into some of those situations.
Right. Right. And I guess, you know, the bigger you get now, you got to start managing all that as well.
Yes.
How many projects could you potentially have going on at the same time?
I'd say in the 90s, on the investigation side, we're probably doing about 100 cases a month and probably at about 30 transports a month. So there was a lot of crossover of cases that were going in different directions.
Have you ever had any of these people that you've rescued, like, get back in touch with you or give you updates as to how they're doing?
You know what? I'm so glad you asked that, because one of my favorite stories is that on Thanksgiving, what my family has always done is we go around the table and everybody talks about what they're thankful for. Yeah. Well, there was a family that also does that happened to be somebody who I had transported. And in the middle of our family doing this, I get a call. And my family comes from construction, so they always thought it was very weird that I would even have a phone with me at the table or a beeper or anything else. But I excused myself, went off, and when I came back, I was teared up a bit. And so they asked, what was that about? And it was a young man that I had transported 3 times. And he was calling to say that as they're going around the table, they're not only thinking about and talking about what they're grateful for, but they each decided that they wanted to call somebody who wasn't present to tell them how grateful. And he chose to call me.
Oh, that's cool.
It was one of the most touching things. And he started the sentence with, "You probably don't remember me." And I went, "Wait a minute." I said, "First of all, there's very few people I transported 3 times.
3 times, exactly.
I remember you really well." Wow. And we talked about it because he was one that I also had located as a runaway, and he was stayed up in a hotel. And I sent one of our biggest guys to the door. And I went around to the back window, figuring that when my big guy knocked on the door that he would. And so he jumps out the back window and I just smile at him because, you know, if he saw me come to the door, I knew he wouldn't because I had transported him before. Right. When he jumps out the window, he just shook his head and went, "Oh, well, here we go.
Here we go.
Back to the program."
Exactly. Maybe this time it'll stick in. Yeah. It'll stick.
But the best part of the story is, he said, "I want to share with you that," and he's now 26 years old. It had been 13 years since I had transported him. Wow. He said, "I'm 26 years old." He said, I'm married. I work for, I think it was Metco Forge, which is a big tool company. He said, "My wife is pregnant." He says, "I've got a great job. I've got a great life. And if it wasn't for you and some of the doctors that worked with me at that time, I'd probably be dead or in jail."
Wow.
So,
I mean, that puts fire in your belly, man. That keeps you going for sure.
Yeah.
So, I would guess like now you probably do a little bit of consulting, a little bit of mitigation for these situations. What advice would you give to parents of teens or folks like that have younger children to, get ready to try and combat all this craziness that's out there? What would you say?
Well, number one thing is communication. Mm-hmm. I spoke in Washington, D.C. to a group of psychiatrists and psychologists. And I started out by saying, put me out of business, please.
Right.
And then they all froze for me. What are they talking about?
Take my wife.
Yeah, really. And I said, one of the questions that they asked was, what is the one thing that you see more than anything else when you're dealing with these teens? I said, absentee father, either physically or mentally. Mm-hmm. And in so many cases, when we're working with them, either it's a divorce, so there is no father living in the family, or the father is working so hard. And I know that he believes he's doing everything he possibly can.
Yeah, that's a good point.
To give these kids a better life.
Yeah.
But if you're not there, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, here's what it comes down to. You're either raising your kids or somebody else is.
Yeah.
Somebody's exactly. Speaking into the lives of your kids. It's either going to be you and your spouse or somebody else. And, if you can't control that kind of content that's going in there, then you really have no excuse. But that point that you make about working too hard, like that's real.
Yeah.
And when you look at our economy and how expensive everything is, I mean, as of recording today, like interest rates have gone up over 7%, it's nuts. Right. So, you have to work hard to survive. Right. But then you also have to balance. If you don't have that work-life balance, that's something that can be really, really challenging, especially as an investigator. Right. Because we like to work. We really like to work. And there's always work. That's the other thing too. As an investigator working in a small business, there's always going to be something to do. Always. But, you get 18 years with your kids, if you're lucky, before they're out, and how you choose to speak into them is a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I am so proud of, I'm so proud of both of my sons, but my oldest son, bought me out of the adolescent services company. And I told him one of the things that I'm most proud about him is that he brought on one of the managers and he made him a duty agent, and brought on someone that was older, whose kids are already graduated. And he made him a duty agent because I didn't think that it was unusual that I had what I was told at times was, a phone or a beeper surgically attached to me. Right. And I would get a call at 4 o'clock in the morning and they would say, Johnny just ran away from XYZ psych hospital.
Right.
And I was just up and gone. And it seemed normal. And then I realized it's not. And I'm just so proud of my son who said, I'm not criticizing me, but saying, I'm going to set things up better, Dad.
Jeez, we got a whole cats in a cradle moment going on here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you have to be there. And I'm not saying that I wasn't there. I tried to make up for it with other things. So I was a room dad.
Right.
I was a room dad. And I went in and I signed a document when my oldest child, when he was first going into kindergarten, and it said room moms sign up here. And I just signed up, and we all came back a week or two later, and she announced who was going to be her room parents. And she said, well, first of all, we're going to change the form. It'll now say room parents because we now have a male.
Very and progressive. So
in that school, I was the first man to sign up to be a room parent in the class. But, I felt if I knew that there were times I was going to be gone, I was going to make sure that I was there with them other times as well.
Yeah. And that's one of the beautiful things about being a business owner and even in the investigative field, because the hours are kind of weird and herky jerky, like you can live your life. Like you can schedule your work around your life responsibilities, right? It's one of those advantages. I remember when I had one of my guys who's actually a VP with me now, when he started, he's like, I like to coach softball. It gets me out. I get some exercise, and it's happening from this date to that date. You know, it's like a 2 month period. And from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, he goes, is it okay if I do this? Yes, please have your work-life balance. Go do it. As long as you're not, you know, shirking your responsibilities and you're getting the work done, I don't care. Go for it, man. I encourage you to do it. Right. And, you know, he did it all the way up until COVID, and COVID ended that program. I don't know what he hasn't asked to do it again. So I don't know if he's doing something else or whatever, or maybe it's gotten to the point where he doesn't even ask me anymore. He just does it because I don't care. The work gets done. Right. So that's been super, super important. So let's talk a little bit about your relationship with Conflict International. Conflict is a sponsor of this program. You know, folks know that Michael Court has been on many times. He's a great guest. And I think what you do is very interesting when you start adding in Conflict's leverage that they have around the world for traffic and things like that. So tell me a little bit about that relationship and what you're doing for them.
Well, first I'll tell you how it started, and that is that Mike and I are both past presidents of the World Association of Detectives, right. And we were both on the executive committee, which is made up of past presidents. Exactly. And so I started sharing with him that I was nearing retirement, or at least scaling back, that I've decided that I'm only going to take on the cases that I really want to do. And so I just started referring things out. You know, people would call me, and if it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do, I would just refer it out. And any time that I referred anything to Conflict anywhere around the world, my clients came back to me and went, thank you so much. I mean, that was so great. It was great experiences every time. And so as I talked more about retirement, and Mike and I talked about it, and he said, well, you know, rather than retire, why don't you just join us? I mean, you're already kind of referring things to us, right. And it all seems to work. And I couldn't have thought of a better situation. And it's really where I see myself as far as being part of a team. I want to be part of a team that I can trust. I want to be part of a team that I know that if I refer something out, even before, if I referred it out, it was so important to me that it got done right, that the client felt like they were well taken care of, and that they got value for their money.
Yeah.
And that's what they were getting. So to me, it just became a natural fit for me to join them.
Yeah, I've had similar situations with them, you know, on the New York scale, you know, where here you get a lot of these international businesses that they all seem to have offices in New York, right? So there's that synergy back and forth where we have a mutual interest in partnering up and doing work together. And you know, you're at it for a few years with Mike and his team. I'm just getting my feet wet with doing this stuff, but yeah, it's really been awesome to see it work. And you know, if any of the folks listening out there do international work, or they get an assignment that's international and they go, what do I do now? What, you know, or I can't handle that. I don't know anybody. You know, consider reaching out to these guys and using them to get it done, because they do have a certain methodology of doing things that will make you look good. You know, that's just hands down. That's the way it goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, what does the future bring for Mr. Alan Cardoza as we look to wrap things up here? Where do you see yourself in the next few years?
Well, I'm right now I'm working with some various Metro Transit authorities. So one of the things that I did as West Shield was we did backgrounds for law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Which, again, if there's any law enforcement agencies out there listening, it is one of the best things that you can do. The fact that if you outsource this, what happens anytime one of your officers is involved in anything where a lawsuit is involved, the other side will always go after training. They'll always go after, you know, was there a mistake done in the hiring or anything? Mm-hmm. If you outsource this, that means it's on us. So the department itself doesn't have to worry about it. You don't have to deal with all of that because it would come on us. Now, fortunately, we haven't had any because we do a really good job of the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm able to expand that because of conflict and do more than just the accounts that I had in Southern California, because that was considered my area. That was where I focused on.
Sure.
As far as backgrounds. Now I'm talking to, you know, Metro Transit authorities all over the country saying that I am now part of a company that can provide the services that you need anywhere in the world. Now, another great benefit is that from a hiring standpoint, I originally got the MPA contract like 35 years ago. And in fact, it was called RTD then, Rapid Transit District. And since that time, everything now is so much more automated. You don't have to have people right there. Right. But the other thing is that hiring is now from people that are from other countries. We rarely had that 30 years ago. You know, about 10 years ago, we were realizing that probably 20% of the people that were applying for a law enforcement position, the investigation had to go beyond the United States from where they had originally come from. And now, because of conflict, I can do those investigations perfectly. Yeah. And again, and right now with the, you know, the Metro Transit, most agencies are now in hiring mode.
Right.
You know, through conflict, they lost a lot of people, and they all are now saying, okay, we need to get strong again. We need to hire and get back to full strength.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do for them.
Yeah. I mean, I had an investigator in my state association reach out to me and be like, it was like, you know, I've got something in Yemen. I got to need some process service done in Yemen. He's like, do you know anybody? I'm like, maybe. Yeah. So I reached out to Mike and said, hey, do you know anybody? And you know, obviously there are some parameters of what you can do. It's a war-torn country, but at least these guys are having a conversation and connected the dots. And I'll be interested to see what ends up happening with that. But it was one of these, yes, we can handle it if it meets a certain criteria. So it is what it is at that point, right? So. Yeah. That's good. So we're going to wind down here. Alan, this has been great. It's been so nice to, you know, talk with you more on a professional level. You and I have seen each other at events and but we haven't really had the time to sit down and chat. So I really appreciate, you know, this time to hear your story and get your perspective on how things are done. And I think it's fascinating. If folks want to get a hold of you, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
Let's see. Probably my email address is acardoza@conflictinternational.com. Mm-hmm. That would probably be the best way. Or if you just go to the Conflict International website, where it says to get in touch with somebody, you know, just tell them you want to get in touch with me and they will get me on the phone right away.
Awesome. And we'll have all the links in the show notes there. So. Perfect. I want to thank everybody for checking this out and supporting the show. Please support our sponsors, and we'll have a new show for you guys next week with more content. So take care, everyone. Have a good week, and we'll catch you next time.
All right.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.